The following is a home program on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter number 9, text number 27, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Dasatkikari, recorded on May 31st, 2010, in Kyalami, South Africa.
So tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 9, text number 27. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yat karoshi yadashnasi.
Yat karoshi yadashnasi.
Yajjohosi dadasi yat.
Yajjohosi dadasi yat.
Yat tapasyasi kaunteya.
Yat tapasyasi kaunteya.
Tat kadushvamadarpanam.
Tat kadushvamadarpanam.
Yat karoshi yadashnasi.
Yat karoshi yadashnasi.
Yat johosi dadasi yat.
Yat
tapasyasi kaunteya.
Yat tapasyasi kaunteya.
Tat kadushvamadarpanam.
Tat kadushvamadarpanam.
Translation in purport. By His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, and whatever austerities you perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering to me. Purport. Thus, it is the duty of everyone to mold his life in such a way that he will not forget Krishna in any circumstance. Everyone has to work for maintenance of his body and soul together. And Krishna recommends herein that one should work for him. Everyone has to eat something to live, therefore he should accept the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna. Any civilized man has to perform some religious ritualistic ceremonies, and therefore Krishna recommends, do it for me. And this is called archana. Everyone has a tendency to give something in charity. Krishna says, give it to me. And this means that all surplus money accumulated should be utilized in furthering the Krishna consciousness movement. Nowadays, people are very much inclined to the meditational process, which is not practical in this age. But if anyone practices meditating on Krishna 24 hours a day by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra round his beads, he is surely the greatest meditator and the greatest yogi, as substantiated by the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Pada Kamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Sha. Sri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunatam Vita T. Santam's Jiva. Sadaita Zavaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Pada Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakanvitamscha. So one can inquire. Prabhupada is saying here, everyone has to work for the maintenance of his body and soul together. And Krishna recommends that one should work for him. So on the one hand, body and, for the body and the soul together, which means staying healthy, not dying, you see. The other hand, it means for Krishna. So how do those two fit with each other? You know, everybody can understand working to keep body and soul together. I mean, that's what everybody's doing anyway, naturally. But how is that for Krishna? You see? How do you make that for Krishna? That's the question. And that's the answer. That's what's explained in this verse. Because we're all working. Even the birds are doing that. They build their little nest, you know, and they fly out. The mother bird sits there and lays the eggs, and the father bird goes out looking for the worms. So everybody's working for body and soul together. That's not a big deal, you know. But how to make that for Krishna? That's the question. Well, you could say, well, I'm doing it for Krishna, but lip service, you know, doesn't really... Everybody can say, well, I'm doing it for Krishna, you know. I went over to McDonald's hamburgers and I had a... It was for Krishna. You know. Just saying it's for Krishna and actually being for Krishna. Those are two different things. So how do you actually make it for Krishna? That's the whole point of this voice, you see. How do you make your normal daily activities you're doing anyway... How do you spiritualize them? How do you transcendentalize them? How do you purify them? How do you utilize them in such a way to elevate your consciousness beyond this material body? You understand? You may say, well, why should I bother elevating my consciousness beyond this body? I mean, I like this body. I think it's pretty cool. I'm having a lot of fun in this body, you know. Why should I think about transcending it? Well, if you think it's cool now, just wait a few years until old age comes and then tell me it's cool. The fact is, this body is subject to four defects: birth, death, old age, and disease. That's a fact. And I don't care how well situated you are, how much money, how much power, how much prestige, how much healthy, good health you have, how much organic food you have growing in your backyard. I don't care what you have. You see? Your body is subject to these four miseries: birth, death, old age, and disease. You can't avoid them. And these are not in harmony with our actual nature. Our nature is we want to always be happy. We don't want to suffer ever. You understand? So we have a contradiction here. We have a self which is subject to misery, namely the body. It is also called the self. Do you know that? Prabhupada explains the term Atma refers to the soul and also the mind and the body. So sometimes the body is said to be the self, the Atma. But that's only in a relative sense, not in the absolute sense, obviously. So we have this self, the material self, which is subject to these miseries, and we have the spiritual self, which always wants to be happy and satisfied. But the trouble right now is we're totally locked into the material conception of the self. That's where all of our energy goes. And even we pray, what do we pray for? Facilities for the material body. Is it? Dear God, just like the Christian's prayer, dear God, give us our daily bread. The Hindus may say, give me my daily chapatis, I don't know. But it's the same principle, you see. Is that love of God or is that love of bread? When I was a little kid, my parents, they wanted me to be a good, pious, God-fearing little boy. So they trained me that I should to pray to God for my things that I want, you see. So they said, little Stevie, what do you want for Christmas? They said, well, I'd like to have some cowboy boots. And they said, okay, so every day you should pray to God for cowboy boots. Can you imagine? And sure enough, on Christmas morning, there was my cowboy boots on the tree. You know. They wanted to teach me to believe in God, you see. So pray for your, every night, little Stevie, you must pray for cowboy boots, you see. So in this way, you see, this, we're trained to take God as our order supplier. You know, the 800 number in the sky, you know, 1-800, give me. So that's not love of God, that's love of material sense enjoyment, using God as our order supplier. So this verse is talking about just the opposite mentality. Instead of taking God as the one who is supplying us, we have to think, how can I utilize my life solely and wholly, totally, fully, 100%, 100% for the service of that Supreme Person? You may wonder, what's the advantage of that? What do I gain from doing that? Some people say, well, how do you know there's anybody out there? I think it's just your foolish imagination. It's like, you know, as a little kid you believed in Santa Claus and now you believe in God. You see? That's what the atheist would say. It's just a grown-up version of Santa Claus, you know. Of course, I don't know, but in America, all the kids believed in Santa Claus. I don't know about in the Hindu community. But as a little American kids, we all believe in Santa Claus, you know. You know. We had our little, it was a whole thing, a whole culture. We used to, on Christmas, we, you know, it's a whole thing. Santa Claus will bring you this and that. So God is just another version of Santa Claus. That's what the atheists say. So, well, is there really a God? That's the first thing we have to understand. We have to first of all understand, if we're going to talk about surrendering to God, we first have to be convinced there is God. That's the first thing. If you're not convinced there is God, then who are you going to surrender to? What are you going to surrender to? Actually, the idea of God is not very difficult to understand. It's not scientifically unsound or philosophically shaky position to understand the existence of God. God means the origin. God means the original source of everything. So if you see sunlight in the sky, doesn't that mean there's a sun globe somewhere emitting the sunshine? Or is the sunshine just bouncing around on its own with no origin? Do you understand? It's like here in this room, there's so much electrical energy manifested in all these light bulbs. You see? So that means somewhere there is a powerhouse providing this energy for all these light bulbs. So somewhere there has to be a powerhouse. We're experiencing so much energy. What did Einstein say? It's all energy. You see? Somewhere there is a power, and energy means there has to be a powerhouse for the energy somewhere. So So that powerhouse is gone, that source for all the energy that is gone. So, what is the relationship, the proper relationship, just like this light bulb here, you see? What is the proper relationship between this light bulb and the powerhouse? You got to be plugged in, isn't it? It's not plugged in, it doesn't have a proper relationship. If it has no proper relationship, there's no light. So, what is the proper relationship for the living being in relationship to the powerhouse? You got to be plugged in. That's all. If we're plugged in, then everything becomes illuminated. What does Krishna say? Gyanena tu tada gyanam yesham nashitam atmanah tesham aditcham vajganam prakashayati tatparam. When one is enlightened with that knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything as the sun lights up everything in the daytime. So when you actually are plugged in, then everything becomes illuminated. That's the thing. Everything becomes illuminated. That is, that state is what is it called? Krishna consciousness. When you actually become connected with the powerhouse, everything becomes illuminated. You may say, well, please philosophically, scientifically explain it to me before I will accept it. This is like saying, well, I refuse to taste the ice cream unless you can scientifically explain to me exactly what happens when it touches my tongue and how it why does it taste good? Scientifically explain it to me why it tastes good. What neurons is a trigger in the brain? How does it exactly happen? When you put the ice cream on your tongue, it really tastes good, you see. And I won't taste it otherwise, unless you can scientifically analyze each and every, you know, minute chemical reaction between the tongue and the neurons in the brain. I won't taste it. That's ridiculous. Just taste the ice cream. What do you need a scientist for? Taste the ice cream, you see. So, all you have to do really is connect with God. You see? All you have to do really is connect with that powerhouse. And you know what? By this process of the Bhagavad Gita, you know what the ultimate result of connecting God will be? You will see God. Just as Arjuna can see God standing before him, you will see God standing before you. That is it. Now that's really being connected, you see. Krishna will reveal himself to you personally. Well, Sangha, do you believe in God? I'd be like, it's like a joke. What do you mean, do I believe in God? I'm seeing God at every minute. Do I believe in God? I'm seeing him at every minute. Is it? So, this is a very nice verse. For telling everybody how to live your life in such a way that you'll be connected with God, that you will know God, that you will see God, that you'll live with God forever. That is the beauty of this verse. And that means everything should be for Krishna. As I mentioned earlier, someone could say, yeah, I go to McDonald's every week for Krishna. No. For Krishna means what pleases Krishna. That's what for Krishna means. If I say, well, I have a special gift just for you, and it's something you hate. How it's for me, I hate it. You give me something I hate. You see? Now, here's a skunk. It's for you. I'm sorry, I don't want a pet skunk. As soon as he releases his little aroma, my house will be uninhabitable for 6 weeks. And you said it's for me? No. You have to find out what is actually pleasing to Krishna. That's what it means to do for Krishna. So Krishna explains so nicely what is actually pleasing to him throughout the Bhagavad Gita. Just like he says, you know, Patram pushpam palam tayam yome bhakta payachati tadahang bhaktya paharitam amnashnami prayatatmanaha. If you will offer me a leaf, flower, food, or water, I will accept it. So where's the McDonald's hamburger? It wasn't listed there, was it? Meat, fish, and eggs were not listed. The vegetarian foods, you see, are being mentioned. And then Krishna says in chapter 3, text 13, Yagyashishta sharashanto muchante sarvakil vishai bhunjate te pagam papam yeta chatchat makaranat. The devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins, because they eat food which has been offered first to sacrifice. Others who prepare food for sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. Who would want to eat sin? So here, have a plate of sin. I'll give you a knife and fork and salt and pepper. Here's your plate of sin. Eat. Would you want to eat it? Like eating stool or something like that. You know? Who would want to eat sin? But Krishna says, even if it's vegetarian food, if it's not offered to me, it's pop, it's sin. So don't be proud. Yes, I'm veg. I'm not one of those non-veg. I'm veg. The monkeys are also veg. Sorry. Human being means you take only the remnants. Yagya. What is that Sanskrit? Yagya Prishta?
Sista. Yagya Sista.
Shishta, yeah. It's in the verse. Yeah, Yagya Shishta. I take only Yagya Shishta. Then that is human being. I only take Yagya Shishta. And then Krishna also advises Satatam Kirita Yantomam. You should always be chanting my glories. He says you should bow down to me. Manmana mamamad bhakto majadji mang namaskaru mamma vaishashiyut vayavang atmanang matparayanaha. Engage your mind always in thinking of me and offer obeisances and worship me. Being fully absorbed in me, certainly you will come to me. You see? So Krishna is giving very good instructions. So how do you maintain your body in such a way that you're doing it for Krishna? Well, it depends on what you do with your body. You don't spend all of your time at work, do you? Sometimes it seems that way, doesn't it? But you don't really spend all of your time at work. What do you do in your free time? Do you try to serve Krishna in your free time? Do you try to do activities to elevate the Krishna consciousness of your family during your free time? Or is it time for sense enjoyment? I'm not going to ask, put anybody on the spot now, don't worry. But be honest with yourself. Think about it. Because your livelihood is supporting what you do in your free time, actually. So how you spend your free time is determining the quality of your time spent earning your living, you understand? If all your free time is used for Krishna, then by your work you're supporting devotional service. But if your free time is used for sense gratification, by your work you're supporting sense gratification. So you have to think about how much benefit you want to get. Because if all of your free time is going for bhakti, that means all of your work time is also going for bhakti. Because it's supporting your free time. Your house, your family, your food, all those things you need. So the key is, if you utilize all of your free time for Krishna, you see, by engaging the family in kirtan, by reading Prabhupada's books, by going to the temple, by going to festivals, participating in the activities to elevate the Krishna consciousness of the people of this planet, you see. And then you are truly dovetailing yourself with Krishna by your actions. And if you have any extra money, as Prabhupada points out, you can give that money to support the preachers, you see, who are spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world to help pay their plane fare, etc., etc., for traveling and preaching, or for putting or building temples here in South Africa, you see. And supporting the activities, the wonderful activities of our movement here in South Africa. So in this way, one should see that one's activities are going in the service of the Supreme Lord, and what is the result? To the extent that you do that, to the extent that you truly offer your activities in the service of the Supreme Person, then you become elevated beyond this material existence. Even within your normal everyday activities of working, shopping, cleaning, cooking, all the normal everyday activities we do, even changing diapers if you have a little baby, all of these activities, they become elevated, and you're in a state of transcendental Krishna consciousness while doing them. If you're truly offering them all in the service of Krishna. So whatever extent you're offering them to the service of Krishna, that extent you feel the transcendental bliss while you're doing them. So how much bliss do you want? You want 10% bliss? How about 11%? Or how about 100%? Would you like 100% bliss in your life? Then you have to give 100% for Krishna. You can't cheat. Krishna is very expert at seeing everything. You can't make a show for Krishna. He knows how much you're holding back, you see. Prabhupada one time said that Krishna doesn't see what you're giving, he sees what you're holding back. See, a rich man, he can make a big show. You're putting $1,000 check. That would be like about something like 9,000 rand or something. Isn't it about 9,000 rand?
Seven thousand rand?
Yes, I will donate 7,000 rand. You see. For him, it's just, it's chicken feed. But some poor man comes in, he gives 10 rand, and that was bigger donation, you see, actually. So the real thing is not the external show, but it's what, how much of a sacrifice you're actually making. You see. That's what really counts. How much of a sacrifice are you actually making for Krishna? That's what Krishna sees. And according to that degree of sacrifice that you make for Krishna, ye yata amang prapadyante tang tataiva bhajamyaha. Inasmuch as they surrender to me, I reward them accordingly. And the ultimate reward is Krishna himself. He gives himself to you. Just like he did to Arjuna and Mother Yasoda. And when Krishna becomes your personal property, that person who owns and controls everything in the entire existence, when that person becomes your personal property, is there anything you can be lacking? Is it possible you can be lacking in anything? What does he say in chapter 9:22? Ananyas chinta yanto mam ye jana paryupasate teksham nichabiyuktanam yogache mam vaham yam. For those who worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. You know how Prabhupada explained that verse? He said, Krishna personally delivers to your door whatever you are lacking. You may say, well, you didn't come to my door and I'm chanting Hare Krishna. Well, wait a minute. The verse says, those who worship with exclusive devotion. What does that mean? That means I have one in my life, in my heart, in my consciousness. I have one object of devotion only, and that is Krishna. Nobody else. Nothing else. Only Krishna. That's what it means, exclusive. Krishna wants all of your love. Jealous lover, you see. Krishna wants all of your love. He wants one, he wants 200%. He wants everything, every thought, every word, every deed, in all times, all places, and all circumstances for him. You may say, what about my wife? What about my kids? Oh, wait a minute. Don't you remember our philosophy? When you water the root, all the leaves and branches are nourished. Krishna is the root, my wife and kids are the branches, you see. That means if you give all of your love to Krishna, then you'll be the best husband, the best father, the best mother, the best daughter, the best son, the best sister, the best employee, the best boss, the best prime minister, whatever you are, you'll become the best. When you give everything to Krishna, you'll become the best at whatever you're doing in Krishna's service. So you don't lose anything by becoming Krishna conscious. Purely Krishna conscious, you gain everything. You lose nothing. So we've simply come here tonight to encourage you all to give everything to Krishna. Is that all right? Are you ready to give everything to Krishna? Not or anything, man. That's my request. So now I can ask if there's any questions. Even if you think it's a dumb question, go ahead and ask. Yes.
You were saying you know how you have to exclusively give yourself to Krishna.
Can you? Everybody. I'm a little hard of hearing. You can relate to me what she's saying? Okay. Go ahead and say, and then I'll repeat it to me.
Sorry. How you need to exclusively give yourself to Krishna, and if you're ready. And like I was thinking, am I ready or am I not ready? Yes, I'm ready. Am I ready today? I mean, how do you like, because like today you feel like you're ready and you want to, and then tomorrow morning you're not that enthusiastic, and then the week after that you're again enthusiastic. You know, like, how do you like try and sort out that roller coaster of being ready on and not ready?
She says that the purport, and you also mentioned that we should give exclusive to Krishna, our devotion exclusively to Krishna. So, one time we think that we want to do that. Yes, we want to give exclusively to Krishna. Then another time we become a little bit lackadaisical, and then we are like yo. So how to avoid that?
Yes. Well, it's just like a little child learning how to walk. You know, sometimes he gets up and makes a few really good steps, and then boom, back down on his face. You just got to keep every time you slip from that full absorption in bhakti, you just got to maintain your enthusiasm, your determination, be patient. Don't expect to become a pure devotee immediately, okay? You just got to be patient, pick yourself up and say, I'm going to try again. I know I really wanted to be cool-headed and Krishna conscious. My anger got the best of me and I yelled at that devotee, you know, whatever it may be. You know what I mean? Or I got lusty, you know, things happen. So I'm just going to try harder next time, and sooner or later you'll be. It's just like anything, like learning how to play the guitar. I mean, it's not that somebody can be, you know, Jimi Hendrix overnight. You know what I mean? You have to learn gradually how to become better and more expert at it. So whatever mistakes you make, you should learn from those mistakes. How to not make that mistake in the future. In this way, by carefully being very sincere and very enthusiastic and being patient, you can gradually transform those weak moments when your Krishna consciousness gets slack into stronger and stronger moments. And finally, you'll reach a point where there's no more weak moments left and you just become completely solidly fixed up. Does that make sense? Okay, any other question? A very nice question. Thank you very much. Any other question? Why are there no questions? That's my question. Why no question?
There is no question because everybody is totally now dedicated in exclusive.
There are already pure devotees, they've all realized Krishna. Actually, we had this pure devotional seminar. We had a thing. We actually passed out paper. We should have done that. You mentioned it, but there was no practical arrangement. Of course, you didn't know ahead of time. It's okay. But what we did at the seminar is we passed out paper and pens ahead of time. So while the seminar is going on, any questions come to mind, we write it down. Then we'd have question and answers. I had a whole stack of questions. We had some really nice questions. I had a big, huge stack of questions. Michael were there, you were there. Were you there for the question and answer session? You saw that? Many questions? Yeah. So if the devotees in Lanesha have questions, my question is why you don't have questions?
Maybe this is their first time.
Well, they're not used to we're strangers right now. Maybe a little shy, you know. No, that can be there. Because it's a matter of a developing relationship. Feeling comfortable to ask questions. See, when you ask a question, you may feel a little uncomfortable. I may say something. It may be taken wrongly. People may laugh at me. People are afraid to ask questions. But once you learn how to ask questions, it'll happen naturally.
No? People are afraid to ask. They feel embarrassed over it. That's the reason the paper and the pen and the paper.
Yeah, the paper was good because there were some pretty, you could say, juicy questions. Like, what about the new thing of, a boy who loves a boy and a girl who loves a girl? Not in the platonic sense, but in the erotic sense. I had a question like that yesterday. How does that relate with Krishna consciousness? If one boy falls in love with another boy, they want to get married, or something. Which is, it's a whole thing. And I don't know about South Africa, but it's probably happening here now too. Yeah. But I had some pretty wild questions, and it was confidential. It was a paper. No, I didn't recognize the handwriting. Nobody, it was, everybody was confidential. So that was the advantage of the paper. You can ask a question, you'd be embarrassed to act publicly, and just sneak it in there on a piece of paper with no signature. But Prabhupada one time, he said, there must be questions, he said. So he told the devotees. And it's actually an injunction in the Bhagavad Gita. You should approach the spiritual master, inquire submissively, and render service. So, a spiritual master has come, so why are you not obeying Krishna? You're supposed to inquire. That's the order given by Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita. Why are you disobeying Krishna? That's my question.
Someone may think that I'm not your disciple, so why should I ask you?
Oh, any spiritual master. It doesn't matter. Doesn't that be your Diksha Guru? Any spiritual master. I should take advantage and inquire. Krishna doesn't say the Diksha Guru. He just says spiritual master. That can be Siksha Guru, Varma Pujarshaka Guru, etc. You have to be Diksha Guru. He doesn't say only Diksha Guru. Yes?
Well, my question is, what does it mean to be self-realized?
Self-realization means to understand who is the individual self. Who and what is the individual self, who and what is the supreme self, and what is the relationship between them. That's self-realization. You are the individual self, Krishna is the supreme self, understand that you are his eternal servant, then you are self-realized. And that self-realization becomes practical to the extent that you become actually situated in devotional service to him, in practice. You see. How much have you actually absorbed yourself in service to him? That is the degree of your self-realization. That even the beginning stage of theoretical understanding is also self-realization. Even to theoretically understand, I'm not this body, I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, you're already self-realized at a beginning stage of self-realization. And when your self-realization becomes mature, that's when you're fully surrendered to Krishna 24 hours a day. But you're already self-realized, even to understand theoretically who you are. That is a certain degree of self-realization. Okay, that's very good. We've had two questions now. Yes?
I'm on your roll now. Vaishnava apparat. So like I was speaking to somebody about this entire Vaishnava apparat situation and everything, and they were saying to me that Bhakti Theater once, somebody asked him about Vaishnava apparat, and his response was that if somebody upsets you, that you should go to them and you should say to them, I'm sorry that I feel this way about you. Like basically admitting that you're wrong and that you're sorry about the way you feel about them. But what happens if you're saying it but you don't really mean it? Isn't it kind of like just hiding behind like a false humility? Mm-hmm. Then you haven't dealt with the situation, so you haven't really moved on with it. You know, how do you balance like trying to be humble about being hurt or something, like? As opposed to like really being, I'm sorry about it, I'm really feeling humbled by the situation, as opposed to just saying it to
the She says that when she heard from Bhaktititta Maharaj, that if you commit offense to somebody as a Vaishnava Prad, then you just go and say, I'm sorry, I feel this way, but you do it artificially, or you really want to feel. Wouldn't it be nice to feel really that you are feeling humble, or just do it artificially? I'm sorry, I'm doing this.
So, what's the question?
The question is that.
Well, basically, there's a difference between actually saying to somebody, "I'm sorry because I'm mad at you, but I'm sorry that I feel this way about you," and genuinely meaning it, as opposed to just saying it to because you feel that.
Okay, I understand there's a difference, so what's the question?
How important is it to artificially admit that you're sorry to something when you're not really... When you're not feeling it, are you...
How important it is to have to make a show of being sorry when you're not really sorry?
When you're not really basically...
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense. I mean, what's the sense of pretending like you're sorry when you're not really sorry?
But you're not really... Maybe you... I don't know how to explain this... You want to say sorry because you want to believe that you're sorry.
Well, you can tell him that. I'd really like to... I'm really sorry that I don't feel as sorry as I should feel. And you're being honest.
It's important to be honest about the way you feel. And if you're not really sorry about it, not to artificially act as if you are. Sorry about a situation.
If you're just honest, then you'll be okay, you know?
Okay.
Just like I said, I mean, I know I did wrong. I'm because I'm so proud and puffed up, I don't feel as contrite as I should feel. Please bless me that I can feel more contrite. I mean, you know, just be honest with them. As long as it's making a show, just be honest. Honesty is the best policy. Okay, next question. Yes.
If someone without the background of Hinduism or the background of Eastern philosophy, someone like a Christian or someone of non-Indian birth approaches you and asks you about Krishna consciousness or Hinduism, what would you suggest is the main idea that you should think
it depends on their mentality. No, I understand. It's a very good question. I know one time it really depends on their mood. I mean, I was one time getting ready to board an airplane in Fiji for Los Angeles on Air Pacific, and we were checking in, and one very haughty gentleman He wanted to defeat me. He saw me there in my robes and my tilak, and he thought, ha ha ha, I'm going to get a religious person now. He said, what is your philosophy? And I get, the mood was like cutting, and he's just ready to cut me. So I thought for a minute, and I said, know who you are and be who you are. And he went, you couldn't say a word. So you really have to judge their mood. Are they humble? They really want to know? It really, you can't make, it's not like just a formula, a mantra that you can use for every single non-Eastern religiously oriented person. You have to judge the individual person.
If someone is very open and admiring of the culture and of the people, not necessarily just Krishna consciousness or not necessarily just Hinduism, but is very inquiring and is eager to learn, because
I would just tell them, you have to really be tuned in to them while you're speaking to them. You have to look at them, you know, read their psychic movements, really understand their mood, and just like a tailor, he makes a custom fitted suit for his customer. It's not like just off the shelf. It's custom made. So you have to custom make your presentation of that individual person. I mean, does he believe in God? That's the first question. Does he believe that God is a person, or God is some impersonal light? You know, and where he's at or she's at, you could always ask them, well, what is your philosophy? And learn a little about more about their feelings and their understandings. And after you've done that, then you explain. That's one way. You ask them, what is your how do you see it? Have them reveal their heart to you first. And then once you understand exactly how they relate with God, then you can show them how the beauty of what they've already understood, and how through the Bhagavad Gita you can go to a high, you can go to a deeper understanding of what they've already realized about God. You understand? If they realize that God is a person, then they're in a very good position. If they say God is a loving person, then they're in a very good position. You can say, well, if you want to love a person, the more you know the person, then it's easier to love that person, isn't it? If you can ask them, do you agree with me? And the more you know about that person, the more you can love them. If you've never seen them, if you don't know what they look like, if you don't know what their name is, wouldn't it make it more difficult to love them? If you actually could see what they look like, you knew what their name is, you knew what their activities are, you know who their friends are, or who, you know, who God's friends are, who his friends are, I mean to say. So I would just, it's an excellent question. I would try to find out a little bit more from them, or try to get a deeper understanding with how they see God, how they understand God. And then show them how, well, that's very nice, that's very wonderful. And then show them how through Krishna consciousness they can go even deeper into that already wonderful understanding they have. That's one way you could approach them. But you have to, you don't want to just completely negate what they've already understood. You have to show them, that's very good, now I can show you a higher understanding, you see. Any other question? Yes.
Right now we are a human species. Right now we have a human birth. So I want to know, due to sinful activities, in the next lifetime, is it possible for the human birth to take birth like in a lower species of life?
Yes, if one is sinful, one will take if one is very sinful and lives an animalistic life, they will become animal. You see, that's a fact. If someone lives like a dog and has a mentality like a dog, they'll be taking dog birth in the next life. It's like when I was in my college days, there was a boy in our dormitory Every Friday evening, after a week of classes, he would go to sleep. And he wouldn't get up until late Saturday afternoon. he would try to sleep like 24 hours. That was his time. So we used to call him the bear, you see. So you can just imagine what he'll become in his next birth. He was striving to be like a bear, to go into hibernation, you know, every Friday after all the classes, and to go hibernate. So according to your mentality, in the Bhagavad Gita there's an illustration, actually. Let's see if they put it in here. It shows four different types of people. It shows a lady who's posing naked, you know, for the nudie magazines. I don't know if they put it in here, but it shows her becoming a tree in her next birth. Because a tree gets to stand naked in the heat and the cold. Yeah, they didn't put it in there. In some of the Gitas, that illustration is there. It shows somebody who has no discrimination in eating, and they become, they become a hog in their next life. So yeah, if one leads a sinful, animalistic life, then one will definitely go down to the animal kingdom in the next life. But if you try to awaken your Krishna consciousness, you're guaranteed a human birth. Even if you don't become purely Krishna conscious, if you make that sincere endeavor to become Krishna conscious as best as you can, then you're guaranteed to continue in your next life where you left off. You don't have to start over again. Wherever you left off, if you make it halfway, you can start off at the 50% mark and finish up the second 50% in your next life. So everybody should make some endeavors, some serious endeavor to be Krishna conscious. That is intelligence. Because that'll guarantee, if you're really serious about it, you're guaranteed a human birth. In spite of whatever sinful activities you may have done before due to ignorance and bad association. So, is that it?
Yes. Is it possible to die prematurely?
Yes.
There's lots of cases, I mean, if you look at maybe 20 years ago, lots of people, when they do die, to more at the old age. But if you look at current situation nowadays, lots of more younger generation, younger people are dying.
By sinful activities, people are. It is sinful karma, you see. It is bad karma to die untimely. And more and more people, the normal age span for lifespan for the Kali Yuga is 100 years. But it's reducing. Now if you make it to 80, they put you in the newspaper, octogenarian. And it's going to shrink. The end of Kali Yuga, if you're 20 years old, you'll be a senior citizen. The end of Kali Yuga. And we're laughing now, but if we were there, we wouldn't be laughing. The Prabhupada said those who follow, take this movement seriously, they won't be there at the end of Kali Yuga. They'll all be in the spiritual world. But yeah, the lifespan is going down.
Maharaj, I have your response to the last question. But on the assumption that you have little karma left, then your life would be a long life. Assuming you are born with only a little more to meet out.
Pardon?
Your karma, if your karma is left, then you will have to continue. You'll have to take again the karma. The left.
If your karma is to take another birth?
Yes.
Maharaj, I said, assuming you had a little karma left to meet out.
Yeah.
And you come back, and it's a very little bit that you would. Then you're not going to live that 100 years.
That depends.
You have a certain amount of breath to reach that level.
You're saying you wouldn't. What would cause you not to live 100 years?
The karma.
The thing is, burning off your karma does not qualify you for liberation. It's awakening bhakti qualifies you for liberation. Because actually you can never burn off all your karma until you take the bhakti. Because as I'm burning off old karma, I'm creating new karma. With every breath, you know how many microbial germs you're killing with every breath?
All the time. Unknowingly, yeah. Yes,
I'm aware. So you will never burn off all your karma unless you surrender to Krishna. That's a fact.
Because an early death is not always an untimely death. a person dies young. It's not necessarily an untimely death.
Mm. So that's an interesting... Your contention is that that early death may not be untimely. That's your contention.
Yes.
Okay. It's an interesting contention. According to the normal lifespan of the Kali Yuga, of course, if Krishna arranged for someone, a pure devotee, to leave his body early, that would be another thing. But, of course, in one sense, there is no such thing as untimely death, because it's all karma. That's the other way of looking. And that may be what you're saying. Because somebody may have a karma to die after 6 months. That's their karma. So it's, in one sense, it is untimely. But in another sense, it is timely. It's both. It's how you look at it. Maybe that's your point. Because
yeah.
In one sense, there's no such thing as untimely death. It was their karma to die at that time. Maybe that's what you mean.
Yes.
Yeah. So yes, but that means that they're... So in one sense, it was a timely death, but that to have that much bad karma, that is not... That means they're not in a state of harmony with the laws of nature. Someone who's actually living harmoniously in a state of harmony with the laws of nature, they'll have a full lifespan. Someone who is who's acting in disharmony with the laws of nature, they will have a shorter lifespan as a karmic reaction for their acting against the laws of nature. So it's timely in one sense, but it's untimely in another sense.
Maharaj, why ask this question? You get children that are born,
mm-hmm.
and after a few breaths, pass on. Alternatively, you get those that live for a week, a month, and there's no karma that they could really...
Karma from a previous lifetime.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So karma from a previous lifetime.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm saying those are leftover karma.
The karma chakra acts in every situation, except for the pure devotee. I'm recognizing you in a minute. Except for the pure devotee. He's completely... beyond the material energy, he's fully connected by the spiritual energy. Go ahead.
Does it mean that they did not have karma? Or does it mean that their karma was so sinful that they had a very little time as a human where they could have practiced Krishna consciousness? Because human life, human birth is a very high birth. And if someone lives for...
It's a sinful reaction. To die young like that means a sinful reaction from previous birth. In other words, to take birth in a high-class family, a religious family, it's a great blessing, you see. And if someone only stays in that family for a short time, it means they had enough karma to allow them that much of a time in that religious atmosphere, and that's all the karma they had. And then once the karma was gone, that was it. They're only allowed... It's just like how much... Somebody can afford... To a rough example, somebody can afford to visit, some fabulous South Sea resort for a longer period of time because they have a bigger bank balance to pay for the hotel. Somewhere a little money can just go for the weekend. A rich person can go for a whole month to that, paradisial resort. It's just a very crude example, obviously. But if there's someone who... That means they only had enough good karma to qualify them for 6 months in a very wonderful religious family where they could hear God's names being chanted and everything. So, but if you find it bewildering, that's natural because Krishna in the Gita says the intricacies of action are very difficult to understand. So it's hard for us to understand it, really, how it would work. It's so far beyond our comprehension how the laws of karma are actually working. But they are working in very fair, very... It's perfect justice. Nobody is being cheated by the laws of karma. They're perfectly just. That's a bit. So why someone would take birth in a religious family and then leave immediately? There could be so many explanations. Why someone, you know, is a small child, they died and they didn't go to adulthood? Well, it could be that they had a tendency to be very materialistic. And that, you know, as a child, that doesn't come in yet.
Yeah.
That comes in after maturity. They could have been spared that degradation which they would have become. There's so many things that could have happened. We don't really know. But I do know this. If you'll chant Hare Krishna in your home, whatever children come into a home with the Hare Krishna mantras being chanted every day, they're getting the greatest blessing, whether they live their whole life or even just for 6 months in such an atmosphere. So all we know is if we chant Hare Krishna, that we're doing the best we can, and Krishna will make all the best possible arrangements to facilitate everyone who comes to our family and to give them the best possible future. That we know for a fact. Anything else?
Isn't it the human birth is for one purpose and only one purpose, to get out of the cycle of birth and death?
Yes and no. The human birth is actually meant only for, but it's also given as a concession for those who want to enjoy sense gratification on a higher level than the animal. That's also good. But that's not the ultimate purpose. Just like that we have two canine teeth in the mouth, it's a concession for meat eaters. So the human life is also given as a concession for persons who want to enjoy a higher level of sense enjoyment. You know, they don't just stay outside in the winter, they can have a heated house, etc. But that is not the ultimate purpose. One should know what the actual purpose is. See, the actual purpose is, as you were saying, to become self-realized, become pure devotee. That's the actual purpose.
Because in this life, only in human life, one can understand that. There's no other species.
Every species has its particular characteristic. That's a fact. The bird has its own, each species has its own expertise. The bird can fly in the sky, the fish can swim in the water. The expertise for the human being is self-realization, that's the thing. The duty, the dharma of a human being is self-realization. But they're given the facility to abuse that position if they want to. That facility is given, that's plan choice B. In the other species, they have no choice. You have to just be a bird, be a dog. You know, you have no choice when you're a dog. You just have to be a dog. When you have to bark, you bark. That's all. You have no choice about it. The human life is the life of choice. You can choose to use the human life for what it's meant for self-realization, or you can choose to abuse it, to try to imitate the animal. Yeah.
Just as how you've mentioned that, there's the Varnashram system that is created, whereby you can be Krishna consciousness, but you have the choice to follow a brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. So my question is, because it seems, according to nowadays in Kali Yuga, and if you just go back 20 years, I mean, compared to the brahmacharis we had before in the temple and the preaching that we did before versus how things are now, it seems that it's a wiser choice to follow the Varnashram system and continue progressively in your life in terms of building yourself career-wise. And yes, you've accepted Krishna consciousness, and yes, you understand the philosophy, and you're realized in the sense of knowing who Krishna is and your relationship with Krishna. So my question is, So you accept the Varnashram system, and then you just trudge it on life, respecting Krishna, going to the temple now and then. But the thing is, you're not pushing yourself, because I don't know whether it is that as you grow up,
you have more, what can I say? You have other aspects influencing your life. Like, for example, okay, I can tell you, I mean, I've practically been in the movement for over 30 years now. And I mean, traveled, served gurus, traveled with gurus, done major projects at the temple, whatnot. So I think that my sadhana previously was so much stronger than it is now. But in saying that, before I didn't have other circumstances that I needed to worry about in terms of career and studying and building myself, from a material perspective. Now because I need to do that, time is much lesser, but at the same time, it's not as if I feel as if I'm not accepting of Krishna, because I am, and I understand the philosophy. I mean,
are you as Krishna conscious as you would like to be?
Yes,
that's
you are.
Well, I think not, because I think I can make that much more of a difference. But at the same time, with the current structure,
would you like to be able to? Let me ask you this: would you like to be able to cover your duties you have now, and still have the same intensity of Krishna consciousness you had before, and be able to do both at the same time?
Yes.
All right. Well, that can be done. That's what you need then. You see, it doesn't mean that I'm as a brahmachari, I'm intensely Krishna conscious, and now as the grihastha, I go downhill. I should be becoming more Krishna conscious than becoming grihastha. And as a grihastha, even more, vanaprastha, more Krishna conscious. It should be progressive going forward. Now I'll become even more Krishna conscious than I was as a brahmachari. That's how it actually should be. Progressing. Throughout the life, Krishna consciousness should be increasing. That's the way it should be.
But I mean, how is that possible? Because I'm asking, how is that possible? Because the one thing that
are
comes
you,
in
you have
now,
a spiritual master?
Well, no.
Okay. Well, see, if I have a spiritual master, and I fully surrender to my spiritual master, who's guiding me, I'm responsible to him, who is pushing me to actually have intense sadhana. Whether I'm a brahmachari or grihastha, in either case, you see. And that push helps a lot. It really does. To feel that push, the spiritual master is pushing me. I have to do this. Guru Maharaj wants me to do this. It seems impossible. How can I do this? But Guru Maharaj is pushing. Why is he pushing me so hard? You see? But actually that pushing is very good. Because that gives the intensity. That I can, you know, I mean, look at Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Was he lacking in Krishna consciousness as a householder? He had 12 kids. Can you imagine? And all those songs he wrote and all those books he wrote. And he'd take a leave of absence whenever he could. He'd go out and preach in the villages, Namahat preaching. He was the one who started Namahat program, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. But he was so expert in his job also, the Britishers loved him. They said, whenever they had trouble with the Hindu-Muslim rights, they'd send Bhaktivinoda Thakur. There was that imitation Mahavishnu, remember? They sent Bhaktivinoda to quell him, you know. So, the secret is to get up early in the morning and chant 16 good rounds before sunrise. That's the secret. And you say, well, how does that fit in my work schedule? It doesn't work. Well, you have to. It's amazing, because if you're really serious about sadhana and keeping your sadhana strong as a householder, Krishna will facilitate it. I was a brahmachari for 14 years, okay? And, you know, I was really addicted to going to Mangalarti every day. I mean, Mangalarti, I still go. I haven't stopped. But anyway, now for almost 40 years, I'm going to Mangalarti every day. So anyway, and we'll have it tomorrow morning, too, 5 o'clock, I think. Yeah. Right here. If you want to come, you're welcome. But anyway, when I got married, they said, well, you should be an ideal householder now. You should get a job. So I took a little training in computer programming, you know. And I got a job. And the first job I had, they wanted me to basically babysit the programs coming out of the mainframe computer in the middle of the night. From 11 p.m. until 8 a.m., those were my hours. Now, what about Mangalarti? Oh, my goodness. Mangal Arati is at 4:30 a.m. How am I going to go to Mangal Arati? My sadhana is going to be messed up. Well, but I had this strong desire. No, I have to keep my sadhana. So you know what happened? I went to the with my first day went, and he said, well, you know, nobody likes to work this night shift, so if you want to take an extra long lunch break, nobody will mind. My boss told me then. So I went, wow. So I would take my lunch break at 4 a.m. I'd head out from the office, go over and pick up my wife at the apartment, go to the temple by 4:30, attend Mangal Arati, be back at work by 5:15. Like an hour and 15 minutes, no one minded an hour and 15 minutes lunch break in the middle of the night. So every day I went to Mangal Arati because I had that intense desire, even though now I'm a working man, computer programmer, sitting there with a mainframe, babysitting the programs coming off this mainframe computer all night long, you know. Still, my sadhana was there. I got my Mangal Arati, and I came in, when I got off work, I caught the tail end of Bhagavatam Club temple. And then I would go home and I think I'd chant my rounds and go to sleep, yeah. But that was my schedule. But if you have the desire to be Krishna conscious, if you have the desire to be a pure devotee, to transform yourself from, you know, lust, anger, greed into pure bhakti, and you maintain that desire, Krishna will facilitate you. And you can be a successful businessman, a successful and professional, whatever you need to do for your family and your maintenance needs. At the same time, you can become a pure devotee. That's the way. You just have to have that desire. Krishna, help me. I want to be your pure devotee. Please help me to do it in the midst of all these duties and responsibilities I am. Arjuna thought, this professional duty I have, this is interfering with my Krishna consciousness. I'm going to throw down my bow and arrows, Mitzvah. I'm going to give up this fight. What sort of work do you do?
Electronic banking.
Contractor?
No. A channel manager for electronic banking.
Electronic banking general manager.
Oh, electronic banking general manager. So just imagine you go in on Monday morning, and you take all of your papers and you say, I shall not do this job. Krishna. I can't handle it. And Krishna says, then he gives you, when Krishna comes to your office there at the bank, and he gives you a 45-minute lecture like he did Arjuna. So Arjuna, he thought, this is not conducive to my Krishna consciousness. You see, this is not piety. I'm not being religious by doing this work. I've lost my religiousness by doing this work. You see? But now, Krishna gave him the science of the Gita to show him how you can do this work in such a way that it becomes pure devotional service. So you have to do that electronic banking management and transform it into pure devotional service. That's the key. To where it's non-different from chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, 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 Rama,
Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
It's possible to do that. I guarantee you can do it. You just have to have the desire to be the pure devotee and dovetail everything is Krishna's service. And then one of the most important things is, how do you spend the money? Is your home is like an ashram?
I'm a bachelor.
Huh?
Bachelor.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, then it's very easy. You make a brahmachari ashram. You get up in the morning, oh, you have no kids to take care of. Oh, my goodness. You should have Gornatai deities there, at least. You have photographs. You should offer Mangal Arati every morning. Sing their Gavastakam prayers and offer Mangal Arati every day. You have it easy. This is in America they call it a cakewalk.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's two kinds of jobs. There's, they call it a sweatshop. Or sweatshop is like, you know, got to work, 18 hours, 20 hours a day. They call it a sweatshop. How many hours a day do you have to work?
8 hours.
Oh, my goodness. That is a real cakewalk. It's not a sweatshop. It's a cakewalk. So, I mean... What time do you go to work in the morning?
I get there when I need to get there. I do a lot more than 8 hours, but the thing is, it's the accountability. I don't need to physically be.
You're responsible. You're on call 24 hours a day?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's okay if they call you in the middle of the RT. You can break the RT to take them. But if I were you, I would do that. I would get up early in the morning, and I would be just like a brahmachari monk in the early morning hours before sunrise. I would get to bed very early. Don't watch television. Come back. I would just be like a monk. Even the monks now, I just saw on the it's an article. That many of the monks now, these have to earn money to pay for their monastery. They go on, they have jobs, and they do businesses now. Many monks in the U.S. now, because the expense of maintaining their monasteries has gotten so high with insurance and health insurance and this and that. The monks have to run businesses now to support their monasteries. These are celibate men doing businesses. But their main interest is to chant the names of God and do prayer. But they have to do business just to maintain their prayer and their chanting. So why you can't be like them, you see? Your main thing should be chanting. Chanting and reading and preaching. But to maintain that chanting, reading and preaching, and to be able to support the Krishna consciousness movement in a very nice way, in a very wonderful way. It's like Jayananda, the great hero of Rath Yatra. He was driving a taxi cab and supporting the temple. He was a brahmachari driving a taxi cab. When he gave the Bhagavatam class, he'd tell about all the people he preached to in the taxi cab. So there's no reason you can't be very, you can't become fully Krishna conscious like that. There's no reason. You just gotta be, you have to get up in the morning, take your bath, the first thing is, get out and chant 16 rounds before sunrise every day. And then once you get that done, and once that's done, then you add the Gravastakam prayers too. And reading the Bhagavatam. Those three things I'd like you to do before sunrise. Well, Bhagavatam you can do after sunrise. But that's what I would say. You get up early, chant your Gravastakam prayers, chanting 16 rounds, read some Bhagavatam. And then hit the workplace running, and do an excellent job, make very good money, good income. That way, you can cover your own maintenance needs, and you can support the Krishna consciousness movement in a very nice way. Do nice service for Prabhupada, you see. And be an inspiration. I know. You can actually preach at work too, just by your own enthusiasm. You can attract people to Krishna even while you're doing your work. I mean, I know when I told this at the temple, I didn't know y'all were there, but when I was I went from computer programming into sales. I became actually an award-winning salesman for a big corporation in the U.S. But one, it was telesales over the telephone. So one day I thought, well, not wearing Tilak, it's not really me, The real me is Tilak. You know. So one day I wore Tilak to work. Didn't say anything, just showed up at Tilak on one day. And that day I sold like crazy. I mean, I made a big profit for the company. You know what my boss said? He said, I don't know what that is on your forehead, but you got to wear. You must wear it every day. So I had my orders from my supervisor to wear Tilak to work, and I did them. So I tried to have fun with it. You know, you can do things like, you know, put a Bhagavad Gita on your desk, you know. Bhagavad Gita as it is, sitting there. I don't know if you have any break time. Do they allow break time in South America, South Africa? Breaks?
Yeah.
In America, there's lunch, half an hour, and then 2 15-minute breaks. They have to give it to you. Of course, if you have your big supervisor, you may work through it anyway to keep your position. But no, I used to, my break would be other, my Java bees, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. My beads openly sing by everyone. But no, you can put Bhagavad Gita there. I know people who made devotees who are working in, as consultants in a big U.S. corporation. They just put a Bhagavad Gita there, and another worker would say, what is that book? They're here, you can check it out and read it. And they made devotees. I know a disciple of Prabhupada who was working, from India, he was working in America as a consultant for some big corporation in Detroit. He just put a Bhagavad Gita on his desk. He made a devotee by doing that. Another devotee now, Ramiya Das. He's the vice president of our temple in Alachua, Florida. And he was a corporate worker, and he saw the Gita on somebody's desk. So, I mean, I've had fun with it. You can bring cookies for the break room. I don't know if they have break room. I'm not familiar with the corporate thing here. But you can bring cookie prasadam and put it there in the break room on every Friday. You know? And they go, wow, when's he going to bring those cookies again? You know? And this way you can have fun with it, be Krishna conscious without having to preach directly. Just do your professional job, but you can do little things that'll make you very happy and it'll make everybody else happy too. Have fun with it. It's nice to make all that money, but you know how much you can keep with your time of death. Make some Krishna advancement too now, and see what you can do to infiltrate the corporate world with Krishna consciousness. Just have fun with it. Don't be pushy on people, of course, but just make it a fun thing so people have fun with it. Now people will like it if you're having fun with them. Not being familiar with South African corporate structure, you know, atmosphere. I don't know. I'm thinking of the American corporate atmosphere that I was working in. I don't know if it all matches. It probably matches to the degree, mostly. It's probably a similar atmosphere, I would imagine. Any of you worked in the American corporation? It's probably this pretty similar atmosphere, yeah.
If someone wants to be a devotee of Krishna and they do not want to surrender to the spiritual master, can they be still Krishna devotee?
Well, ultimately, becoming Krishna conscious means guru. That's what it means. Taking initiation. Because what does Krishna say? Ye me bhakta jana parata, na me bhakta state jana. One who is my devotee is not my devotee, but the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. Hari Purana, Krishna is telling Arjuna that. So that really helps us. If we can find one devotee that we really trust, that devotee, we're willing to take the guidance and the instructions from that one devotee as our authority, you see. If we can place ourselves under the direction of an authority that will follow his instruction, will take correction from him, etc., then that qualifies us to be truly recognized by Krishna as being a devotee.
But isn't that
chapter 4, text 434? 434? Yeah.
Is if we are devotee of Krishna, then won't they follow that instruction?
Yeah, of course. Krishna says, surrender, inquire from Guru, serve Guru. Yeah, that's it. That's what it means to be a devotee. That's it. I tried that. When I first moved into the ashram as a visitor, not as a joining, but I tried that little game. I said, well, I'll just be a devotee of Krishna, but I don't want to take initiation from the spiritual master. Of course, in those days, it was Prabhupada, the only guru. But I didn't want to take initiation because I wasn't willing to surrender that much. So I told him, I'll be a devotee of Krishna, but I don't want to be a disciple of the spiritual master. That was my position. And then the devotees showed me, but Bhakta, or Steve, they called me Prabhu because I distributed 7 BTGs. I said, but Steve, Prabhu, it says here in Bhagavad Gita 4:34, Krishna is saying that you should take a spiritual master. Well, I couldn't say anything, but I still wouldn't do it. I was stubborn. But then I had a change of heart one morning when I realized the devotees were tasting something that I wasn't tasting. I realized the devotees were experiencing transcendental bliss that I was not experiencing. And I realized that I really wanted to taste that bliss also. So then I accepted Prabhupada into my heart at that very moment. And that's when I really met him. That day when I decided that I'm going to give my life to Prabhupada. So that kind of commitment to a devotee, I will give my life to this devotee, you see. That's the kind of commitment which really brings the full mercy and the blessings from Krishna. And that empowers us to completely conquer our senses 24/7 in all times, places, and situations. So speaking of conquering the senses, it's getting a little late now. Since I'm getting up for Mangal Arti tomorrow, it'd be good if I don't stay up too late. Especially since I'm also recovering from pneumonia. So anyway, we're so happy you all came tonight. It's so wonderful to see all of you here. It's just really very wonderful. Whatever austerities I've gone through to come here, and overcome by seeing all of you here tonight. And we're very, very grateful and happy. So, this is for me to distribute, or what?
Yes.
Yes?
Yes.
Yeah?
About the e-course, I do not know how many are here.
Yeah, I have my e-course. You go to www. How many are on my e-course already? Okay, that's nice. Those of you who would like to get on it, you can get my card here with my sign up thing. Anybody who wants a card is welcome to have it also. So when you come up to the Bhashana, if you want a card, let me just say card and I'll give you a card on the Bhashana. So we'll stop here. Raja Vidya Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. 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 Jai.